All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast. It's Friday, October 6th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, DFSR.com/deals. Gets you, the podcast listener, a free 7-day trial to our projection system. Why is it 7 days? Because we just are so confident in our system that you'll be around out for the long haul after you try it out for free for that week. So go over to DFSR.com/deals. You get optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, NFL, premium content, premium chat. All of it's covered under one subscription package. And it's just $24.95 as opposed to $34.95, which is our typical rate. So DFSR.com/deals will get you started. Buddy, I know you're chomping a bit. We got multiple podcasts going today. We've got an NBA one.
I'm chomping
right
the bit because we're half an hour late. That's
why I'm chomping. Chomping at me. Like, this guy just couldn't be any more impatient. You know, just like, okay, dude, we're going to get started. Sorry I was a half hour late for getting it and just talking to you off about other stuff. In the meantime, I know you want to get started, so let's talk some basketball. I'm reading you loud and clear. We are going to roll through game by game the NBA slate here for Friday. And then if you want to also subscribe to our football podcast, we'll be going game by game for NFL week 8 as well. So go check that out. Maybe I'll throw them both up in the same feed for those people that haven't subscribed to both podcasts. And as always, rate and review them. Buddy, let's talk basketball here for Friday. We'll roll through game by game, talk about some of the outstanding injury stuff, how it could affect things going forward. We can also talk about some of these new teams and how they're playing differently. The first game, Chicago and Charlotte. Chicago already decimated. They were actually like sort of an interesting fantasy team coming into the season. I dare say they're actually maybe even more interesting now because they have major injury issues. Chris Dunn is going to miss time. I don't know if it's 4 to 6 weeks or if he's out for the year. He had a major injury. And they also lost Bobby Portis as well.
Yeah.
That's two of their five starters. Before the season started, they lost Lauri Markkanen also. So three of their five starters are already out. They're 9.5 point underdogs to the Hornets. What kind of minutes do you think this opens up on the Bulls? Like, could you see Jabari Parker playing a ton? Cameron Payne's a guy that's kind of been playing more for Dunn. Do you find this, they're not a good team by NBA standards, but for DFS purposes, we might be able to find some value here.
Yeah, I think looking for value makes sense when you have so many vacated minutes there. It is tricky, though, on the Bulls. I mean, we saw this with Cameron Payne this season already. Like, last game, sure, he was great. 30 minutes, scored 36 fantasy points. And he'll also just play 20 minutes when he starts, too. Like, the Bulls, and we've seen this many, many times in the past, especially at the wing position, getting more opportunity for the team doesn't necessarily mean we know exactly where it's going to head. In the meantime, I also expect guys like, you know, Holiday and Levine, that we've seen minutes and usage upticks for them. It looked like Antonio Blakeney was going to get more usage early in the season, and then miraculously just went from playing 30 minutes to 21 to 4 to 8, even as more opportunity became available. So I'm not exactly sure. The issue I have on FanDuel with them is that these guys are already price corrected. Jabari Parker is 7,000 on FanDuel. Like, you can't pay 7,000 for this guy, right?
I mean, it's close. Maybe it's not as. I mean, I thought it'd be closer. Actually, I think he's a good fantasy commodity. He's a guy that I've wanted to play in the past. He can score. He can't play a lick of defense, which is the problem with that. It's hard to keep him on the court. I thought his projection would be a little higher here at 35 minutes, which is probably at the far end of what we can really expect.
35 minutes
him.
Might be overly aggressive too.
That's what I mean. It's a little tough. I mean, Wendell Carter, we could see more minutes out of. You know, I don't always listen to coach speak on stuff, although basketball things are interesting because the coach, Hoiberg, came out the other day and was something like, oh, we want Levine to control a little bit more of the offense, which is usually, a little signaling that's saying, hey, dude, just chuck as much as you want to.
Running the point, too. Yeah.
What's that?
And running the point, potentially generating
I think they just kind of said to him, like, so I could, you know, 20-plus shots out of Levine on a nightly basis is probably in the cards. I think I'm with you. All these guys are just a little bit too expensive. This will be what I'm going to kind of try to shake out as the day goes on because I think there is probably some value to be had and just trying to make sure we get, like, all the minutes correct. On the Charlotte side, Kemba Walker, and he went through a run of just insane shooting. Only got 14 shots up last game. Do you think we see his usage start to normalize as the season goes on? Because he was, 29 shots, 16, 31, 22, and then 14 against Chicago. Do you think the shots kind of just tend to regress back to what he had done in the past, or is this a guy we can still maybe pay mid-8,000s on? Chicago is an awful, awful defense, and that's actually playing at a faster pace. Is there value here on the Hornets side?
I think so. I mean, we've always been able to pay low to mid 8,000s for Kemba Walker in the right matchup. And, you know, it's interesting when you get these early season matchups against the same exact team, that actually can give us some insight into what the coaches plan to do against those teams. And while Walker had his fewest field goal attempts of the season, I don't necessarily think that, like, I guess I want to be careful just in general. This is going to be me standing up on my soapbox for a little bit, because you and I talked about this before the podcast, and I don't think this was your point, but I think I've seen a lot of this from our chatters and people on Twitter and so forth. Wow, something's different in Charlotte this season. You know, Kemba Walker, like, they're trusting him a lot more. Are they really? Because I don't think the coach's plan was to have him shoot 29 or 31 times a game. And that can be true, and he can still be a value, right? So it's I think we want to take a deep breath on some of these early season performances, understand that guys like Walker on teams that are basically the same, you can probably trust him for the same amount of production. So I don't know that he'll wind up in, like, our optimal lineups this or tonight, rather, for these slates. But, yeah, I still think he's a fine value at these prices. I'd actually be more cautious about a team like the Bulls, where a lot of opportunity appears to have opened up, but the prices have all skyrocketed before anyone's really proven that they can pay these prices. I think a lot of people are going to look at that team and all the vacated minutes and whatnot and be like, well, geez, somebody's got to come in and be a good value now. That doesn't appear to be the case to me, at least on these price points right now. So
I think the plan is for Walker to shoot more. How much more is going to be the case? I mean, I know he only had 14 shots last game, but he went to the line 11 times. So you kind of need to translate some of those opportunities to, because he'd been shooting like 5 free throws a game. He doubled it last game. That does account for why there was something of a dip in shots, I think, against Chicago. And I'm with you. You can't just put him at, like, you know, 32 points a game for the rest of the season. That would be pretty hard to sustain. Although the pace in the NBA, I don't know, maybe the uptick in pace across the league in NBA and the uptick in scoring is probably going to start supporting some much higher scoring from some of these players. What were you going to say?
Yeah, so real quick. So again, on the field goal attempts thing, this is something I saw buzzing around Twitter. I can't remember who the example was that people were talking about right now, so I'm going to crap all over my own example here for a second, but we could just use Walker. So Walker, 22 field goal attempts per game so far this season. You know, a take could be, well, hey, he's going to shoot more, new coach in town, blah, blah, blah. Last season, the leader in the entire NBA was Russell Westbrook at 21.1 field goal attempts per game. So, and James Harden, you know, classic, huge usage guy, 20 field goal attempts a game. He was second. Projecting someone like Walker, and you're not saying to do this, but I think there are people out there who might feel this way. Projecting someone like Kemba Walker with no track record of doing this for 20 field goal attempts a game, I think is insane. I think you can start by, if you really think there's going to be an increase, start by his highest ever, which was 18.3 shots per game 2 years ago. And if you want to start with that instead of last year's 17, I'd be comfortable, but you just can't get carried away and just start extrapolating based on 5 games worth of stats.
Yep, I'm totally with you. I do think there's something to be said for, I agree that the players aren't going to just go crazy and just, like, he's not going to attempt more shots than, like, Westbrook did last year. And I do want to make note that there is a definitely increased number of shots just going up across the NBA. So I don't know if using last year's base, maybe this changes by the end of the year, but we're, you know, six games in for most teams. And there's just a clear 5-6% increase already in just how many shots teams are putting up in general across the NBA. So I think using last year as baseline is a good start. And I wouldn't be surprised if we just see, I think we are going to just continue to see, because the new defensive rules and pace and stuff like that, we're just going to see more shots across the board. So if a couple players had more shots than, you know, Westbrook had last year, that wouldn't totally shock me. All right, let's get into Golden State and New York. Golden State minus 12 favorites here. Curry has just been otherworldly to start the season. Scored 51 through three quarters the other night, and that game was well over. Golden State sort of just doing what they do every year, which is blow teams out. I don't know what
when you have an unfair amount of talent on one team, that'll happen.
And they play the Knicks, who have an unfair lack of talent. it's not unfair because it's all their own doing. But the Knicks have there are 12-point underdogs in the Garden. What do we want to do? I mean, Curry's still probably a pretty good play. Durant, his price has really come down. He's barely shot any threes this year for whatever, just because, I don't know, the shot attempts just aren't there because of the blowouts, or just Curry's just making every three. So that's kind of the way it's going. And Klay's price is way down. These guys are getting pretty cheap. It's a great matchup. But how worried are we about them just all playing three quarters again? Because that is a definite problem when it comes to the Warriors.
Yeah, I'd be pretty concerned about it. I don't know yet if you, like, how much you want to downgrade the minutes. I think you can pretty safely not play guys like, say, Draymond Green, who both seems to be suffering from a lack of minutes and just zero opportunity. I mean, this guy's averaging 6 points from the field so far this season, and I actually probably do believe that general trajectory here. For guys like Durant and Curry, they have shown that if they're going to be blowing teams out, that these are going to be the guys doing the blowing, Doug. And I think, why are you laughing?
You get me with that every time. You always say that, and it makes me laugh every time. Keep going.
I don't know why you're laughing, but anyway. So yeah, these guys will just be blowing their hearts out, and then you have a guy like Klay Thompson, let's say, who seems to me to be more of a big tournament play. Right now, so far, the plan has been to get Curry and Durant theirs, and it looks like Thompson and Green are going to only be playable in games that stay closer. So I'd be comfortable with Curry or Durant. I mean, maybe even comfortable is overstating it. I would be okay playing them. I still would be concerned about the blowout, but listen, these guys are just paying the price every night in spite of blowing teams out every night. So I don't know if it's, you know, rational to worry too much about it, because heaven forbid the Knicks should stay close for whatever reason, then you could see some astronomical numbers out of these guys.
One thing I like to do early in the season is just look for players that are running bad on shooting, because that's the thing that's going to usually bring prices down in the short term, especially guys that are very scoring dependent. Yep, last night it was CJ McCollum. You know, people are like, well, why do you want to play CJ McCollum? I'm like, everything's the same for him. He's just had some weird game script stuff, and he hasn't been shooting the ball well. And then he just got in foul trouble, but still shot the ball pretty well last night. Jeremy Grant was kind of the same thing. Klay really fits that part, opportunity for me here, because if you look at his shooting, he's shooting 15% from three this year. Like, he's 0.8 for 5.5 on the season. That, you think that's going to sustain? No chance. This guy's like a 40% something three-point shooter. And if he's not hitting the three, that's where all of his value is wrapped up. So we are just going to see a Klay Thompson lights out night one of these nights, maybe multiple in a row, just as the three-point shooting regresses. He 100% fits the big tournament play for me. Price way down. And if he just gets hot, that can be the reason they blow them out too. So Durant is kind of in the same boat for me as well. And I'm just worried that the game's over before the fourth quarter even starts. Knicks, what do you do with these guys? They're 12-point underdogs. Trey Burke, Enes Kanter. The guys don't really play consistent minutes anymore. Is there anything to be said for them from cash or GBP, or kind of just like a game stack, hope that they stay close and that's where you can get your upside?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say. You figure out which Knicks you think will be a part of the team staying close, probably just Tim Hardaway and maybe Trey Burke or something like that. And you say, hey, you know, if literally all goes well and these guys are just knocking down threes, maybe they stay close, and you stack both sides of the game. Maybe you get there on that. I will say I am excited for the next time Burke is in a reasonable matchup. He seems to have really solid usage, good assist numbers and stuff so far. He's paid 6x on this price in two of the last three games, even as he's only played 30 minutes. So if the Knicks ever are in a close game, I think you can start taking a look at him. But yeah, this team is just complete wasteland at the moment.
Toronto is hosting Dallas. Toronto's looked as good as any team in the league to start the season. They're 5-0, have a plus 11 per game point differential. Excuse me, just plus 11 total point differential, not per game. Plus 11 point differential in the season, which is second only to the only to the Pelicans, actually. They are 11.5 point favorites against Dallas, who has come in and looked interesting. They took a terrible loss to the Hawks the other night. We're up 20 after the first quarter and still lost to Atlanta. Are we worried about blowout here? Kawhi is a guy that our system has liked to start the season. This is the first time, I think, that we have not had Kawhi in an early optimal lineup on a night that he's playing. Is the price just getting too high for him? And I'm also a little worried that we haven't fully accounted for Dallas's sort of new style of play. They are bringing in, you know, two-fifths of a new team, basically, in their starting lineup. Pace is up, defense is down. What do we do with teams like this early in the season that we might not have fully accounted for, that they're just playing a different style this year?
Yeah, well, okay, so a few things. So, yeah, for Toronto, that 11.2 point differential is per game. So that's...
Oh, it is.
That's insane. Yeah, for sure. And that's completely nuts. Yeah, I mean, 11 points would just mean they won by 2 points every time, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, because like, they both seemed wrong. Like, I was like, how are they winning by 11 per game? Points. And then also, how are they... Okay, keep going. Yes, I was translating the numbers wrong when I was looking.
All good. I just wanted to clarify that in case, so we don't get nitpicky tweets / emails, which will happen from time to time. That being said, I think that... Okay, so it goes two ways here. So yeah, some teams... I guess like you have to look at it on a team-by-team basis. And you have to ask yourself, is there a good reason why this team is playing differently this season, right? And so in the case of Dallas, you have different personnel, you have different coaching. There's good reason to suggest that even with roughly the same personnel, I mean, they're not playing Dirk, so that matters, right? Dirk just being on your team means you're going to have a minus one player effect when you're trying to go quickly up and down the court. Harrison Barnes has never really been known for running and gutting either. So you can say, okay, yeah, this team could go from being bottom of the pack to sort of middle of the pack pace-wise. You know, a team like Sacramento, same story, different personnel, different coaching. And then again, I guess I'll just go back to like the Charlotte example. It'd be pretty strange for Charlotte to play two fundamentally different, even with different coaching, just because it's all the exact same players. And I think with a team like Toronto, you know, they're one of these funny teams where they've kind of played to their opponents, and they've always played on the slower side, but not as slow as everyone. So they kind of have this, like, you know, middle of the road reputation. They did bring in Kawhi, and he's certainly different than DeRozan, but is he fundamentally that different from DeRozan on offense that you would want to, like, change everyone's projections around them? I'm still not sure. This is a very long-winded way of me saying I still want to wait for sample sizes to shake out pretty much across the board. I think when it comes to the pace of a game like this, like Toronto facing off against Dallas, I do think Vegas, you know, with everything that they have on the line, is a pretty reasonable place to turn. I don't think we want to go overboard in leaning on Vegas too much, and, you know, they have different incentives, and, you know, we've talked about all those issues in the past, but I think we can turn to Vegas here and say, okay, Vegas is seeing Dallas as a significantly faster team than they have in the past. Like the fact that this game has a 6-point higher total than Clippers Rockets, like, I think that tells you all you need to know about how Vegas views these two teams. I mean, these two teams faced off last year, there would have been like a 208 total and not a 224.5 total. So yeah, I definitely think you want to adjust expectations, because the interesting thing about Dallas was last year they played slow, but they also played terrible defense. This year they're playing a top 10 pace, and they're still playing terrible defense. Yeah.
So. That's the thing that I'm having the hardest time wrapping my mind around, because when you look at the opponent points per game, the points per game and the opponent points per game this season, they're just, I keep going back to it, they're insane. Dallas is allowing 119 points a game. That's like not even close to the worst in the West. The Lakers are allowing 125 points a game. Kings, Spurs. 122. The Spurs, 122 points. The Spurs, 122 points a game from the opponents. Like, these numbers are just so goddamn crazy. Like, the Pelicans are scoring 132 points a game. A game! Like, I know they've only played three games, but none of those games went to overtime. This is the new world order in the NBA. This is across the board just so crazy. This is the hardest thing. I think Dallas, look, Toronto's still a good defensive team, and if you think that things have come up across the board equally, across all teams, let's say, there's just no reason to really target guys against Toronto, I don't think. I am a little bit worried that they just blow Dallas out as well. I mean, do you see Kawhi as a cash game play? We can move on from this game, but do you see Kawhi as a cash game play? It's really only he and Lowry are the guys with minutes anywhere close to like 35 and above at this point.
Yeah, I think Kawhi is playable here in cash games, and I want to say that I think he's very matchup dependent at these prices. In spite of Toronto's, you know, great start to the season, Kawhi has still gotten his minutes, you know, 37, 35, 31, and 35. He's really only paid this price in a satisfactory way once against Minnesota, and the rebounds have been, you know, kind of coming and going. Like, he had good rebounding games to start the season, then they kind of trailed off in the last two games. I don't know. I'm not bullish on Kawhi to perform at this price point over the course of the entire season unless something changes here. But I think in what might be one of the league's best matchups right now, you could probably play him.
Milwaukee, 8 o'clock game. Milwaukee goes in and plays Minnesota. Milwaukee, another team where the Giannis starts the season just in very Giannis fashion, calms down a little bit in the short term. Minnesota dealing with Wiggins' injury. He is questionable for tonight. Josh Okogie played the other night, got a start, actually double-doubled. It's hard to project something like that for him. What do you see? This matchup is another one with a high total, 234, third highest on the board for the night, and a very close spread. It's Milwaukee, 1.5-point road favorites here against Minnesota. Is there anything you like against this team? I mean, again, I get a little worried that some of these guys are priced pretty correctly because these are teams that are concentrated around their starters. I think there's a little bit of value to be had, maybe a little more on the Minnesota side. What are your thoughts on this game?
Hey, give me Giannis, dude. This guy, 16.5 rebounds per game through four.
He's another one where I'm like, sorry to interrupt you, but he's another one where I want to make some corrections about possible stylistic differences, especially in like how they're going to perform. And the rebounds were one thing I was going to ask you specifically about Giannis. Like, if they're just going to play him like more like small ball five and just get him closer to the rim, are we comfortable boosting his rebounding rate this early in the season? Because I know you're one. I'm an overreactor at times. I know you're not the other way, but
I could be an rebound specifically. Yeah. Well, I think you took the words literally right out of my mouth. I was going to say, this is a case with a single stat, when you're looking on a case-by-case basis, of where you stand on the court really matters for your stats. Look at Kevin Love. He goes from Minnesota to Cleveland. The rebounds fall off a cliff, specifically because Cleveland posted him up on the outside, right? And if you're just hanging around the three-point line, you're not going to get rebounds. Like, that's not where the rebounds go. And Giannis is the same way. If the ball's going to be in his hands on offense, great. That's going to help with the assists. on defense, who he squares off against really matters. If he's going to cover wings, the rebounds aren't going to be as high. If he's going to be down there banging, doing some of the small ball five thing, or, you know, kind of playing a true stretch forward, power forward type spot, you're going to see double-digit rebounds out of this guy with great regularity. And I think, you know, it reminds me of a Nate Silver article about Jeremy Lin, when Jeremy Lin came up and had that Linsanity run with New York. And he basically said, it was after like four or five games, and he was saying that four or five games isn't much, but when the performance is that big of an outlier, it still is meaningful. And I think that's how I feel about Giannis's rebounding totals. Like, it's one thing for like someone, some random dude to show up and just get a huge rebound game. It's one thing to just roll off four straight. So it still could be an outlier, but I think you'd be better suited to say, okay, this guy probably is someone who could contend for the rebounding title this year. And I think you can move his stats accordingly.
Yep, and I've already done that. I actually done that after two games or three games, and then I just did it a little bit more. And again, these are like teams against all different personnel, which is important also, because, like, you know, 18 rebounds against Philly with Embiid. I know that he's not guarding Embiid, but I'm saying that, like, they're not changing the style for too much based on what the other team has, right? So, like, I think it's important, and I think it's something we can look at. One guy that I think is still underpriced, really, on DraftKings is Karl-Anthony Towns. And even people in chat last night were like, oh, you know, Towns is going to burn me again. You know, Towns screws us again, like, you know, because we played him the other night. Towns has had some very weird games. What are your thoughts here? He's down to 8,000 on DraftKings. This guy started at like 10,000 to start the season. To me, nothing has fundamentally changed except for some foul trouble, some blowout games, some weirdness around his playing time. I still think this is a guy they plan to play, you know, mid-30s to high-30s minutes when everything's going right. Am I crazy? I think he's almost a lock for me on DraftKings at 8,000.
Yeah, Towns is just like the poster child for everything going wrong for this guy to start the season. I mean, first of all, he's shooting more three-pointers at a higher percentage than at any time in his career. This guy's shooting 45% from three to start the season. On the whole, he's shooting 43%. And, you know, you and I talked about how basketball stats normalize. The past 3 years, his first 3 years in the NBA, he shot 54.2%, 54.2%, 54.5% from the field. So if you're telling me that all of a sudden something happened in the offseason, Karl Towns is so mad about the Jimmy Butler thing that now he's going to drop 13%, 12%.
That's a real narrative for people. Like that
biggest
Jimmy Butler
joke
thing
in the entire world. If you think this guy can't dunk the basketball anymore because Jimmy Butler, you know, hooked up with his girlfriend or whatever the story is, I didn't even follow that nonsense, then you are a crazy person. That's all I have to say. You're a physical, crazy person. You should seriously consider mental health, because that's not what's going on here. The guy's shooting 96% from free throw. Like, every indicator, like, when smart people look at this stuff, not complete morons, I hate to rant here, but when they look at, like, what's really going to affect, like, is a guy shooting better or worse, looking at three-point percentage and field goal percentage is the first place they look. If Towns can do that at a better rate, he can't all of a sudden shoot 5-foot bank shots at a worse rate. So just chill out, play the guy, he's free right now, and don't give me a hard time about it in chat unless you want to be yelled at. That's fine.
Oh, I love it. Oh man, getting fired up. I'm trying to think of other things that could like trigger you like this. I'll think of it more as we go along. We are going to want to pay attention to the Wiggins news with Okoji. Yeah, he's not really a guy that I'm all that interested in. Typically, guys like him are not going to find a lot of usage on a team with Butler and Towns and Teague and Derrick Rose off the bench. So I do think that last game is just that double-double with the 10 rebounds is not something that I really want to try to translate on a game-by-game basis when you're playing on this team, because like Minnesota's style is still very much the same. All right, next 8 o'clock game, Clippers in Houston. This game has a lot of fantasy implications because Chris Paul is back tonight after the two-game suspension, and Harden is out for the next two games at least. There are questions about who is going to start. Houston has had issues this year replacing some of the guys they lost, specifically Ariza, in the offseason in terms of like the wing play. James Ennis is hurt as well. They started Michael Carter-Williams last game. That experiment did not go all that well. There's talk that Melo might start tonight. I think that the two clear winners, and it's pretty obvious, and this is not going to be a secret to most people, is that are Paul and Eric Gordon. Without Harden, they get huge usage bumps. Do you see the possibility of just stacking these two guys? Now, this game has a much lower total. This game, actually, funny, Houston Clippers has the lowest total on the board at 219 by a lot. I mean, this is almost 10 points less than 10 points or more or less than almost every other game. Still, though, do you think we just see crazy usage out of Paul and Gordon here? Does it make sense to just stack them for cash and call it a night? I'm wondering that we did see a pretty major price correction on Paul. He's up almost 10,000 on FanDuel.
Yeah, he should be, though. I think that Paul, I mean, in the prior two games, Paul was already, you know, doing an approximation of paying these prices on 29 and 32 minutes. He was already among the top 10 in the NBA in terms of time of possession. And the guy who was second in the NBA during that time was James Harden. So right. You're basically getting rid of, I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but you're getting rid of the second most time on the ball in the entire NBA and redistributing that among a guy, well, first of all, a guy who is already a ball hog in Paul, and not in terms of like not passing, but just in terms of having the ball in his hands. And then a guy in Eric Gordon who's shot 39 shots over the last two games. And with Gordon, we're just hashtag blessed here because he barely paid the price against the Clippers and didn't pay it against Utah because he shot so poorly from the field. I don't think you want to, you know, extrapolate Gordon's poor shooting performance going forward. And I think that basically, again, he's another guy. If you just zoom out for one quick second and realize this guy just shoots 42% from the field basically every season, no matter what's happening around him, what team he's on, who his opponents are, whatever, that's going to come back up. So if he's shooting that much, he would have made six more shots last game and then easily paid the price. And yeah, I really love Gordon, love Paul. I think both of them are, you know, in that cash game must category, even at the sort of advanced prices here.
Just for our system purposes with on-court, off-court data, we have Eric Gordon at 10% usage bump and Chris Paul at 11% usage bump. And just as an example, this is like as high as you'll ever see over this kind of sample size. Yeah. Like we never get this kind
of
usage.
And that's regress. That's just not like the flat out just pulling.
Oh, that's regress. Oh, that's like heavily regress. It's like more like 35 or 40% or something like that. That's regress based on the amount of minutes. I forget the exact formula I wrote, but it's like something based on like, it's based on the amount of minutes divided by the multiple. I can't remember what it is, but these numbers, right? It's not a. This is the usage numbers are much higher per percentage, but we regress them to kind of bring them into the scope of normal. So yeah, I'm with you, Paul Gordon. I think we see maybe more minutes out of Gerald Green if Melo starts. I think that's getting interesting from a scoring perspective, especially if they plan to play him like 35 minutes. I think I have him at 31 minutes right now. If he was starting, I'd be comfortable taking him to like 33, 34, and with a guy like Paul. Paul will just get you, like, it's a little different than Harden. Like, Paul will also just get you those mid-range shots, whereas Harden's more of that driving kick to three. I think that Paul will get guys like Melo more involved. The one guy that takes a usage downgrade with Harden off the court is Capella. Capella gets a 2% usage decrease because he just gets so much off of those, like, drive and dive stuff that Harden does. So he's, like, maybe still coming pretty cheap on FanDuel, and on DraftKings. What about the Clipper side? They're playing slow. The game has a slow total because Paul definitely slows down the offense. Anything you like about the Clippers?
Not especially. I think that the Clippers are just one of the least exciting teams in the NBA for me right now. You know, they're playing like, you know, even guys like Patrick Beverley that have seen some DFS usage, just playing mid-20s minutes. Guys like Lou Williams playing mid-20s minutes. Avery Bradley too. Like, it just seems like this is where DFS careers have gone to die at the moment.
Right.
The only guy really doing anything with this opportunity right now is Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris is fine, but again, in a game with one of the lower totals on the entire slate, do you really need to play him? I just don't totally think so. Are you seeing something on the Clippers that I'm not? Because right now, I just see a lot of sad sacks who are, I mean, I guess Gallinari. I should have mentioned him too. Gallo is kind of paying his price on a pretty consistent basis. But outside of those two guys, it's just a pretty sad and desperate situation there.
Real quick, Chris Paul or Steph Curry tonight? They're the same price on FanDuel.
Chris Paul.
Interesting. We have Curry for probably a tick more, but I'm a little bit, we haven't probably factored in the blowout. All right, two more games to go. Brooklyn goes in and plays New Orleans. I mentioned New Orleans a minute ago about the amount of points they're putting up per game. It's just completely ridiculous. 132 points a game, 7 points more than the next closest team in the West. Which is also the next highest in the NBA. They're just killing everybody. Still hard to start the season. Minutes very concentrated around the starters. Besides, you know, that's the five guys on the court plus Randall and maybe like a little Darius Miller and Solomon Hill. But for the most part, in close games, they've showed their hand. They want to play their starting five all of the minutes. Does that give us safety? The prices come up for some of these guys, but I think actually a couple of these guys are still coming at bargains. What are your thoughts here on New Orleans?
Yeah, so I mean, on paper, yes, I'm like happy to play as many of these guys as I can get. Specifically, I like Mirotić. I think, you know, he was basically unanimous chalk cash game play against the Clippers. Granted, that was a pretty small slate, but and you know, he's getting a little bit more expensive, but the guy's just shooting so often that it's hard to hate him too much. And I think that, you know, again, when a team is playing this many minutes all together and a guy is shooting that often, part of that just kind of looks like the plan to me. So I still like Mrotić. Holiday's price really hasn't moved at all. The performance hasn't totally been there.
Yeah, let me talk about him real quick. He's another example of a guy whose price, and this team is scoring through the roof, and his price has barely moved. It actually might have even dropped a little bit. And for me, it's revolved. He hasn't made a three-pointer yet this season. 0% from three to start the year. Now, he hasn't taken a ton. He's 0 for 11 to start the year. I think some of this is because like they just have other shooters like Mrotić playing more, and then they obviously have Davis. But 0 for 4 last game, 0 for 1, 0 for 6. And then he's shooting 31% from the field in general, even though he's taking like 13 shots a game. I think Holiday, he's another one. He kind of fits the Clay thing for me, except he's like Clay, but with more safety because he actually, the assist numbers are still there, 9 assists a game, 5 rebounds a game, 2.5 steals a game. The only thing that hasn't gotten there is the scoring, and it's specifically because he just hasn't made any shots. I love Holiday on this slate. I think he's a guy, as we look at the rest of the team and think, oh, you know, look at Davis's performance and look at Mrotić's performance and stuff like that. I think Holiday is maybe a forgotten guy, and it could easily, a 3 for 4, you know, from three game like this with his other stats, it easily gets him the value. Do you see, you kind of agree with that assessment? Because that this fits the running bad from shooting theme like to a T.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen Holiday perform at these prices in the past with similar personnel, and even more so. I think he was like around 8,400 in terms of fair value last season, and he's the best matchup in the league. We haven't even talked about Brooklyn yet. Brooklyn just will continue to be a terrific matchup for opposing daily fantasy players, and the performance still hasn't been there in spite of his team playing faster, in spite of them scoring more points. So I think, yeah, we're going to see, it's kind of like in the stock market when you have a company lagging other companies that are in the same sector that's rising very, very fast. That can tend to be a good value opportunity. Holiday reminds me of that. I think it's a rising tide in New Orleans, and we're just going to see, like, we'll probably see some of these guys, and maybe Mrotić is a candidate here. We'll probably see some of these guys pull back just slightly, and I think we see Holiday fill some of that as well. So yeah, love this guy right now.
I still love Elford too. This guy's a triple-double, could be triple-double candidate each night. He did it in the first game, got buzzed off minutes because they were crushing the Kings in the second game, and then went for 26 and 7 with 3 steals in 36 minutes. He's another one. If the game is close, they're going to play him 36, 37 minutes, and that's all a guy like him needs. At 7,400 or whatever his price is, he's like in the 7,000s. He's easily a 5X candidate every night because he's not relying on just getting his shot. If the assists and rebounds and all that other stuff is going to be there in a fast-paced game, then he's a guy that I think has a high cash floor, and I still think he's underpriced. Yeah, 7,400 on FanDuel seems like kind of a mistake to me if the plan is to play him like 36 minutes. Brooklyn, I went through the minutes here. There was just another season of, and D'Angelo Russell is kind of interesting. They played him a lot. Would you trust minutes on a guy like him, or we have too much of a track record on Brooklyn to say he plays 32 and then 33, and then it's back down to 25 in one game? I feel like I've seen just too many nights of that kind of D'Angelo Russell performance to want to play him in cash.
Yeah, I don't want to play him in cash. I think if you're going to play Brooklyn guys, you're doing so very similar to the Knicks right now. I mean, Brooklyn are tremendous dogs in this game, 9.5-point underdogs as of this podcast. And I think if you're going to try with Brooklyn, you have to speculate twice. You have to say, not only are they going to hang in the game, so you're just hoping for good luck there, but you're going to pick the guys who actually play consistent minutes if they do happen to hang, you know, that they didn't wind up hanging because the second unit got hot and all of a sudden Russell plays 25 minutes in spite of it being a close game, which we've seen no shortage of times. If there is anyone that has something resembling safe minutes, you might have, you know, someone like Caris LeVert, I guess, is someone you could plug in. But yeah, outside of him, otherwise you're just guessing. And I don't really want to be, like, even on a bigger slate like this, I just don't feel like I need to be in the position of guessing even for my big tournaments.
Final game of the night is 10 o'clock. It's 2 hours, so we're going to have to wait 2 hours, basically. There's an 8 o'clock game, and then we wait all the way till 10. And that's Washington goes in and play the Kings. Kings are another team that have really stepped up the pace this season. They are allowing a ton of points per game, 122 points per game so far to start the year, behind only the Lakers right now in the West in terms of how much that they're just allowing the other team to score. Washington is a 5-point favorite. They are coming off a close game against Portland. Do we want to make sweeping adjustments to what we had for the Kings? They played so slow that this last year, but now with De'Aaron Fox and some of these other guards, they seem to be running just up and down the court and still playing no defense. Are we comfortable rolling some of these Wizard guys in there? Because, I mean, guys like Wall and Beal and stuff are expensive, and it seems like they might have the best matchup on the board.
Yeah, you can play them. I think that Wall and Beal are appropriately priced, so you're playing them not, like, you're not showing up on this slate just to play Wall and Beal, but if they wind up in your optimal lineups, that's where you kind of shrug your shoulders and say, okay, I get it, you know, I can run these guys, and I'm paying a premium for it, but I probably should be paying a premium for it. I don't know if that's, you know, too... too lukewarm a take for going up against the best matchup in the league, but you know, you really are seeing pretty aggressive prices, you know, even just based on what these guys have done this season. Neither Wall nor Beal has really averaged paying off these prices, so you're just, you know, and you know, part of that is, you know, Beal only played 19 minutes against Golden State, right? So,
right.
You know, understanding that there's going to be strength of schedule issues this early in the season, but yeah, I think you're basically speculating, and probably appropriately, that the matchup will make up for the lack of performance so far in these prices.
And I'll say that DraftKings' pricing is much softer than FanDuel's right now. I mean, John Wall on FanDuel is like 9,600. That's priced up for a matchup. He's 85 on DraftKings. So if you're looking for ways to kind of hedge based on prices, like Wall at 8,500, I think you're going to see him basically as a chalk play. Like another example, because I'm looking through some of these differences, Jabari Parker, 7,400 on FanDuel, 55 on DraftKings. You want to go play Jabari Parker? Go to DraftKings and play him. Like 5,500. Is nothing for some of these prices. 61 for Gordon. So this is what Karl-Anthony Towns the same way. It's crazy for season over season. We saw FanDuel just never price correcting a guy at all, and now you're staring down even big slates where it's getting more and more difficult to make full lineups on FanDuel because even bench guys are expensive. All right, what about the Kings? They played their starters a lot of minutes last game. Hield played a ton. Darren Fox has still been playing a ton, but. Can we ever trust like a Buddy Hield 30 minute per game? Like, or Justin Jackson, he started for Iman Shumpert. Shumpert is questionable right now. So if he's questionable, I'm not sure you can trust Jackson's minutes. But like Hield, Bijelica, I mean, can we ever trust Bagley. Kings or Bagley? I mean, can we ever trust these Kings minutes? I feel like they're another one, like Brooklyn. It's like, ooh, now is the time they're all going to play 32 minutes a game. And then it's right back down to 24, even though they started. That's kind of where I feel about the Kings. I don't know if you feel differently.
No, I mean, I feel exactly the same way. Bijelica is a great example here. They bring him in. They're like, all right, Bijelica, man, this guy's good. 27, 10, 30, 20, 31. Yeah. Like, it's just, you never see minutes like that. It's like, it's a 27, 10, 30. It's like just such a, and right back down to 20. It's just such a bizarre sequence. Like, you have to assume, it's kind of like when we talked about Giannis's rebounds, where you're like, man, but a four-game stretch of that crazy. A four-game stretch of like that crazy bouncing around in minutes just indicates that it's an institutional philosophy of playing players crazy amounts of minutes. And that's just not where we want to be for DFS purposes, in my opinion. I think someone like Fox, you know, he becomes intriguing because obviously he's flashed big-time upside even on these prices. But he's also flashed the ability to play less than 30 minutes. And I think you're basically in that GPP speculation territory. I think a very interesting stack would be Wizards, Kings, with the idea that the game stays close. It's only a five-point spread. And that the good players are good. And I think that has legs. You know, it's tonight could wind up being really crazy. But for your cash game purposes, I just don't. It's too early for me to say that I really need any of these guys.
Yep, I feel the same way. I wrote up Markieff Morris as a possible power forward play as well. He just needs to stay himself out of foul trouble. That's his big problem on a nightly basis. He has big upside if he can play, but man, the guy just cannot see a foul that he doesn't want to commit and just get himself on the bench. But if they're without Jan Mahimny and Dwight Howard again, they're very short on bigs, and they've shown the willingness to kind of like play him small ball five for stretches, even though they start Jason Smith. And again, that just it's a thing that's good for him, and it just gets him in foul trouble. All right, we're going to get out of here. We're going to go record the NFL podcast for Game by Game. Go over to dfsr.com/deals for that free 7-day trial. Get yourself started. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, NFL, and all the other goodies that come with the subscription. We'll be back again next, a more consistent NBA pod schedule next week when I'm not traveling, because I know I kind of screwed that up. Buddy, I'll talk to you in a minute when we talk football, and talk to you next week about basketball.
Let's go.